It's exciting to see so many organizations and residents from very different backgrounds share this progressive vision of the future of 7th Avenue as they join together to help plan the future of our city bikeways. As a resident, I am grateful to be a part of this process. Because we want to make sure this process is a process where everyone is involved, our group held 3 different community events. Some of our neighbors are excited for the positive change, and some are concerned about the greenway design. Therefore, we are talking to pedestrians, cyclists, neighbors, and city residents to make sure everyone has a voice. We will continue to advocate for everyone's involvement because a greenway on 7th is everybody's greenway, not just for those who live on 7th. Included in our written testimony are supporting documentation, including letters from neighborhood associations, signatures in support from residents, survey results, and a list of reasons why 7th Avenue is a superior choice over 9th Avenue, in addition to being half the cost, saving $1 million of taxpayers' money. Thank you for your time and attention.
So it's the amendment to move it to 9th?
If
I agree with you, do I vote yes or no on the amendment?
I've seen it go back and forth from 7th to 9th to 7th, so I think that I think it's been moved to 9th. We would like to see it go back to 7th.
Got it. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Paulette Rossi, and I am not talking about the property that Jill Rossi's been tracking for, I think, years. I'm talking about my opposition to Comp Plan Change 688 and Comp Plan Change 290, which changes a current R3 multifamily middle density housing property to a mixed employment R5 single family zoning. The property is on Sandy Boulevard between Northeast 145th and 147th. It is vacant ground going south for 22 acres, making the eastern boundary of the Argay Park neighborhood. Argay is hundreds of R7 and R10 single-family homes and hundreds of apartments. The neighborhood needs the current R3 zoning of condos, townhouses, and duplexes. This property was originally zoned R3 in the 1960s by the forward-thinking Multnomah County Commission that reasoned that downsizing baby boomers would buy condos and their children would buy starter homes that were townhouses. Please keep R3 zoning. It is a spice of life to have housing choice, and it is a flavor that makes housing affordable. Thank you.
Thank you. Tom?
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Karwacki, Vice Chair of the University Park Neighborhood Association. I'm speaking today not only on behalf of the University Park Neighborhood Association, which has a sheet dealing with specifically F-68 and N-30110 and N-30087, which we're all in favor of, and specifically then on the other side with North Portland Neighborhood Services headline, the North Portland Land Use Group, which is composed of the land use committees of the 11 neighborhood associations of North Portland Neighborhood Services and the North Portland Neighborhood Chairs, have approved the following comments. Overall, we feel that the City Council amendments improve the 2035 comprehensive plan recommended draft, and we specifically oppose 2 BPS staff amendments, P55 dealing with the Harbor Superfund and P68 dealing with technology. We generally support almost all of the amendments. We suggest P45 to have some of P19's language, which would be some sort of zoning capacity, so it's not the entire quarter mile, that it's somehow dealing with 3,500 or something like that. In conclusion, and sort of important things, there's over 50 of these policies that we agreed to and so forth. I'd like you to take a moment, close your eyes. I know this is hard to do, but I thought it was going to be clean up for the first group. The NPLUG and NPS chairs ask you to close your eyes for a second. And think of what your individual amendments would do to North Portland. And we see a North Portland that has a variety of housing types and missing middle densities near centers that serve all people, courtesy of all of you. Houses that are affordable, thank you, Saltzman and Fritz. Neighborhoods that have historic homes and resources preserved, thank you, Mayor Hales. neighborhoods that are engaged in land use and budgeting. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. A PIR that serves everyone and those who remember Vanport. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. A Hayden Island Neighborhood Center that limits heights and may have a bridge to the Expo Center. Thank you, Mayor Hales. No fossil fuel export or regional distribution centers. Thank you, Mayor Hales. And a pedestrian-friendly Lombard Avenue and a Willamette Bike Boulevard, courtesy of note of Commissioner Novak, that doesn't have a convenience store on a blind curve.
Thank you,
Commissioner
much.
Fritz. Is this what you see?
No, thank you very much. I just have a clarifying question. You said you opposed P65.
It was P55 and P68. Policy 55 that dealt with the Harbor Superfund, which we preferred the citizens or the community, the citizens harbor advisory group. And the technology was, we thought the wording made it so that you wouldn't have public investment for technology.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Next three.
Our 97 and 98, Matt Ferris Smith and Charles Tissot, and number 117, Howard Patterson. And then that's all from the previous Thursday's list.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Sir, we'll start with you.
Great. My name is Charlie So, and I'm here to speak in support of Amendment P45 regarding middle housing. So middle housing can help address three of the city's most current, most urgent issues right now, which is housing affordability, neighborhood preservation, and transportation access. So first, middle housing can add more affordable rental units. These buildings are shorter and smaller, and they can be built with lower construction costs, and these reasons make them significantly more affordable than your typical tall concrete or steel apartment or condo structures that we have seen a lot. And middle housing can also make home ownership more affordable. The existing single-family housing stock is becoming increasingly unaffordable for young families in Portland to buy their first home. Middle housing type of homes will offer families a fair chance to afford owning a home in Portland. And second, middle housing offers a scale transition between the mixed-use centers and corridors and the surrounding single-family areas. Legalizing middle housing could reduce one-to-one demolitions by making it possible to add more units in existing houses rather than tearing old houses down and replace them with larger and more expensive homes. These middle housing structures also have lower construction impact to the neighborhood in the area. So by legalizing middle housing, Portland can grow in a smarter way and maintain some of the neighborhood characters that make Portland unique. Finally, density is one of the most important factors making walkable, bike-friendly, and transit-accessible neighborhoods. So well-designed middle housing structures effectively add more density with smaller footprint and enhance walkability. And this will support Portland's transportation policy and mode-split goals by allowing neighborhoods to support active and green transportation choices such as walking, biking, and public transit. Thank you.
My name is Howard Patterson, and I co-own the house at 267 North Ivy Street. I'm an 18-year resident of Portland. I'm here to support Amendment P45 and also to speak in strong opposition to Amendment M42. North Fremont, west of MLK, is designated as a local street. The stretch of North Fremont affected by M42 features a beloved elementary school, a historic church, and two lots of affordable middle-density housing. The other structures are single-family homes. Now, there are a few empty lots awaiting development along North Fremont, a couple of blocks west of Vancouver. Amendment P45 would suggest that these lots be developed as middle-density housing, adding density to our residential neighborhood without overwhelming its livable character, serving as a transition zone from the high-density commercial Vancouver corridor to the more open landscape of single-family homes further west and north. And R1, in fact, is how this region is now zoned. Developing these lots within the limitations of R1 zoning is perfectly in keeping with P45's recommendations. However, due solely to the insistence of a single landowner, Amendment M42 attempts to upzone these lots and a number of others to CM2, despite virtually no support and a great deal of opposition from the community, including opposition from some of the landowners whose property this amendment would upzone, in particular the Open Door Church. This kind of spot zoning is not in keeping with the comprehensive plan and is likely to have detrimental effects on traffic in an area already troubled by increasing congestion, on the safety of school children and other pedestrians, and on the area's small-scale residential livability. This landowner has presented no plan, not even a description of the project he intends to construct. Further, we have no idea of what might be built by future developers in the other lots he does not own that are also being upzoned. This landowner is a longstanding member of the local community and has been very generous to that community in many ways. But whether a developer comes from inside the local neighborhood or a distant city, a zoning change that opens the door to such unrestricted development seems unwise and uncalled for. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
I have slightly more detailed testimony in writing also submitted.
Welcome. Hi,
thank you. My name is Matt Ferris-Smith. I live and work in Portland. I'm a renter here. First of all, I just want to say kudos to you all for sitting through all this before I start yammering at you. I don't know how you do this job. I sat at the last comp zone meeting you had last week, 3 hours in a hot room. Kudos to you. So thank you. I just wanted to say that. So I'm here today because I strongly support Amendment P45 regarding middle housing. I really wish council would support this. I have heard both last week and this week a lot of concern around the process around this, and I empathize and I understand that concern, but, you know, you can't, and I think there is opposition to this, there will always be opposition to this, and as, you know, public officials, sometimes you have to make these hard choices, and I think this is the right thing for Portland. So middle housing, I would say, really strongly reflects Portland's values. We care a lot about livability and neighborhood character in Portland, and middle housing would improve both livability and neighborhood character through our city. Adopting Amendment P45 would enhance Portland's livability and neighborhood character in the following ways. One, by improving academic success for lower-income students, because we know that those students benefit from living in mixed-income neighborhoods. Two, by preserving our nearby farms and natural areas, because they are more likely to remain undeveloped when we allow for more housing inside our city. Three, by reducing the need to get around Portland using a car, because walking, biking, and transit become more convenient and safer when we allow for more housing inside our city. So summing up, academic success for all our students, easy access to natural areas, convenient and safe options to travel without a car. These outcomes reflect Portland's values, and middle housing supports them all. Please pass this amendment. Thank you.
Very much. Carla, next three, please.
This is the new list for who signed up today.
How many people are on this list, do we know?
I don't know if I have the last page, but right now I have 84.
Okay.
I don't think there's 84 people.
The first three, please come on up, are Terry Parker, Mark Hoffman, and Peter F. Fry. And they'll be followed by eight, Doug Klotz, Lori Kovac, and Carol Klan.
Welcome, everybody. Terry, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah. Okay, Terry Parker, I'm speaking on P45. By calling for the addition of middle housing in single-family home neighborhoods, it appears the density extremists and affordable housing crusaders have teamed up to destroy the village, in their eyes, to save it. This paradigm would be equivalent to constructing 80-story buildings in downtown Portland in the Pearl District. The whole idea of middle housing throws out traditional zoning that has been designed to protect the sanctity of Portland's diverse single-family home neighborhoods and tears at the heartstrings of the very neighborhoods that people buy into for their livability. Street trees alone cannot replace green yards that provide outdoor living space for families and supply habitat for urban wildlife. The fence that extends across my modest backyard often doubles as a freeway for the many gray squirrels that make my neighborhood their home. As opposed to preservation, the middle housing concept opens the door as an incentive to demolish more and more affordable and quality single-family homes. Land prices increase significantly when more density can be added. Will new housing options be as affordable as existing starter homes? While internal conversions of existing large houses should be considered as a way to add density, cottage clusters do not belong in R5 zoned and smaller lot size neighborhoods. Any new construction in single-family zone neighborhoods needs to fit scale and setbacks of existing homes nearby and must require one off-street parking place for each housing unit. Charging households in single-family home neighborhoods a fee to park on residential streets in front of their own homes is contrary to affordability. Likewise, affordability is not continually increasing sewer, water, and garbage service rates and jacking up property taxes. Weakening zoning regulations must not be determined by profit-centered development interests. If the middle housing concept is to be considered, an extensive amount of community outreach and public response must take place, decoupled from and not to be confused with the comp plan process before and if any implementation could take place. Thank you.
Jerry, thank you very much. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, commissioners. I was, my name is Mark Hoffman. I'm the director of development for Garden Commercial Properties, a subsidiary of our parent company, Garden Homes. We are a New Jersey-based development group that have owned a piece of property in Portland for 30 years. I personally have been involved with that for 20 years. It is a property located on the corner of Northeast 122nd and Sandy. This is a property that has been proposed to be classified as general employment, and we have before the commissioners Amendment 59, which would shift it to the mixed-use corridor. I've submitted testimony previously in support of why we're asking for this. Primarily, the highest and best use for this site is a mixed-use opportunity going forward. It's been used for retail for many years. A mixed-use corridor would allow the redevelopment of the site in the future in many interesting ways. Again, the testimony that I've submitted shows that very clearly. It's our thought that the current manner in which this property is being used is underutilized. We admit that. But we see in the very near future an opportunity to re-energize and revitalize that corridor with a mixed-use zone. As part of that, the types of projects we've done include, we have a number of different avenues we pursue, which include lifestyle centers, which have components of residential, the flexibility to choose what type of residential might be appropriate for the community and meet the needs of the area is also something that I think would fit in well here. But the most important thing, in my opinion, is the retail use that's currently available is something that is very appropriate for the area. I worked with the DOT 5 years ago to set up that whole corner to facilitate the development, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir, very much.
Okay, my name's Peter Finley Fry. I'm here as a planning consultant for Garden Homes, which, as you know, is located 122nd Northeast Sandy, and speaking about Amendment 59. The staff argued that the site is well-suited for employment. It is not, in my opinion. Single users on large sites like this are very rare and do not happen very often. Multiple users do not occupy an isolated site. This site is not geographically connected to Columbia Corridor, separated significantly by Sandy and a large overpass. Staff further assumes that employment wages are higher than commercial. This is also not necessarily true. A call center or bank office could happen on this site as an employment use, but neither have very high wages at all. Multiple use commercial centers containing self-owned businesses, professional services, and managers all have higher wages and jobs accessible to the surrounding neighborhood. So what does the neighborhood need? The urban form map designates 122nd as a civic corridor. If you look at the maps as we did, where the Safeways are, where the Albertsons are, none of them are around this neighborhood at all. The neighborhood does not have commercial services, no grocery stores. Portland's goal is to provide goods and services accessible to the neighborhood. We feel that we can help do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Carla, the next three, please.
Our 4, 5, and 6, Doug Klotz, Lori Kovac, and Sam Noble. And they'll be followed by 7, 8, 9, and 10, Carrie Walters, Carol Chan, and Mary Kyle McCurdy, and Nick Sovey.
Mr. Klotz, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Doug Klotz. I'm here to speak about the missing middle, P45. I support that. I heard the concerns from United Neighborhoods for Reform, Ms. Suchek and Mr. Parker. They seem to mostly support the concept but are concerned about implementation. I believe that adopting Amendment P45 now is the first step toward providing more affordable, sustainable housing, adopting into policy the city's support for middle housing. Once that's in policy, then the future process will be to implement the policy, write the regulations, and that will come along with the neighborhood involvement that these folks are concerned about. This is just a policy. This is not zoning code amendments. So this is just the first step, and I think we should do that now to send a message that we support this. I also support. I would modify the area of application mentioned in the amendment. It's a map of it, which covers currently in the amendment. It covers areas within a quarter mile of designated centers and within the inner ring. I would add within a quarter mile of frequent service transit corridors, and especially at least a quarter mile around light rail and BRT stations, which seems like, you know, that's indeed where we want density of any form. I also support zone changes crafted by BPS planners and supported by the Planning and Sustainability Commissions for two areas in Inner Southeast. The proposed zone change from R5 to R25 between Stark and Alder and 15th and 20th is a conservative approach. I appreciate the mayor's and Commissioner Fritz's work on that alternative proposal, but I think it's unnecessarily complex and confusing compared to the simple zone change to R25, which will have a similar effect. The area east of Lone Fir between Belmont, Stark, and 26th and 30th is already higher density than that previous one. Staff went through this lot by lot, carefully crafted a zoning pattern, and I think we should support that, and so therefore I oppose Commissioner Novick's proposal number two.
Lots, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we do have your written testimony, so thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Lori Kovac. I'm testifying in support of Commissioner Novick's amendment number two in his memorandum dated April 12, 2016, which would leave the zoning unchanged between Southeast 26th and 30th and between Stark and Belmont, excluding the area north of Belmont proposed for mixed use. The area in question is currently zoned single-family 2,500 and 5,000 and was proposed to be changed to multifamily 1,000 and 2,000. The comments I heard from the planning staff in support of the proposed zoning change is that the area has an existing mix of housing types and that there is a potential for affordable housing in the area. I think the residents of the area are being treated unfairly by the way these justifications are currently proposed to be implemented. The issues of a mix of housing types and a need for affordable housing are equally true for many parts of Buckman, Sunnyside, and Kearns. If the principles upon which this proposed zoning change are valid, they should be discussed and implemented in the neighborhood or a citywide change of zoning standards, not by picking on a few households. Changing our zoning now would be unfair. Our neighborhood should be able to participate fully in the concepts developed by the residential infill project, and particularly in the discussion of middle housing, which I support. We currently have a vibrant mix of single-family, duplexes, triplexes, and some larger multifamily residences. What makes the mix work is the scale of the buildings, few of which are over two stories, and most of which meet single-family setbacks. The proposed changes would allow currently conforming single-family homes to have four-story apartment buildings constructed immediately adjacent. The scale of the buildings that would be allowed outright in the proposed zoning do not belong in an area with historic single-family residences. This change is too extreme for an area already providing a variety of housing of the types the city is hoping to encourage. Please adopt Commissioner Novick's amendment to leave our zoning unchanged. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thanks for your testimony. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Sam Noble. I own a house at 710 Southeast 26th Avenue in the Buckman neighborhood. I'm here today to support P45 middle housing and oppose amendments S20, S21, S22, which reject the PSC recommendation for Buckman west of 20th Avenue. I oppose the proposals described in memos number 1 and number 2 from Mayor Hales and Commissioner Novick on April 11th and April 12th. Changes in Buckman to the west of 20th are minor, but as part of a comprehensive plan where many neighborhoods are zoned to grow just a little, this is important. As a lesser point, the R25 designation allows roof lines to rise an additional 5 feet, and this can be critical in an area where many older buildings need new foundations that are only financially justifiable by building ADUs in new daylight basements. My house is east of Lone Fir Cemetery. My immediate neighbor to the south is zoned R2.5, but my similar house and lot is zoned R5. The PSC proposal would normalize the zoning in my area in a fair way. Remember, 5 feet higher to the south. I love the idea of bonus density overlay, especially one that can bring existing multi-unit buildings into conformance, but I can't support the Novick-Hales proposal for two reasons. One, it ignores the reality that some old structures are going to be redeveloped, especially those that are smaller and less valuable, as found on 26th Avenue. And two, design review is expensive and uncertain, undermining the bonus value. We'll lose housing capacity. We need prescriptive standards. You have heard lots of support today for middle housing. Missing middle development is most attainable on R1 and R2 lots, and higher density zoning is a meaningful way to compensate compensate property owners who are suddenly adjacent to intense commercial development on corridors. To conclude, the area east of 20th is adjacent to a town center, has adequate parking and frequent bus service. The streets lack consistent historic architecture, and there are few historically significant properties. So I want to end my testimony with a question for council. If you won't zone for the missing middle here, where today's density is already higher than what's proposed, and that same proposal didn't galvanize a small army of bright yellow t-shirts to provide sincere and compelling opposition, where can you actually support it?
Thank you very much. Carla, the next three, please.
Have requested to come up together. Carrie Waters, Carol Chan, Mary Kyle McCurdy, and Nick Sovey. That's 7 through 10, and they'll be followed by 11, 12, and 13, Ellen Dubbins, Virginia Burgess, and Bob Johnson.
Welcome. Why don't you kick us off?
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Carrie Waters, and I act as Community Engagement Manager at the Native American Youth and Family Center. I come before you today on behalf of Anti-Displacement PDX, or ADPDX, a coalition of community-based organizations that, as you know, aims to end displacement in our city. ADPDX has worked with city staff, the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and City Council for over a year to develop and advance equity principles in the comp plan. As you know, improvements envisioned to Portland's neighborhoods throughout the comp plan will inherently lead to higher property values. Without proper mitigation of these pressures, development excludes and isolates many longtime community members, disrupting our sense of place and belonging. The policies we successfully advocated for in the comp plan provide a framework to ensure that development benefits rather than further burdens those that have suffered in place throughout times of abandonment and disinvestment. Thank you for including these policies in the draft plan. In the meantime, we are here today to weigh in on the proposed amendments. Reinforcement of exclusionary practices like the proposed downzoning in East Moreland will only further race and income segregation and is, simply put, bad policy. I speak to you today in my professional capacity, but also as a lifelong invested Portlander to support Amendment P45, middle housing. Last month, our landlord finally found a buyer for the old Buckman middle housing where my family has lived for the past 6 years. We don't know the implications for this, but our housing crisis couldn't be more evident as we peruse Portland's staggeringly limited rental supply. We oppose amendments S20 and S21 in the Buckman neighborhood that down-designate significant blocks along Morrison Street that have potential for higher densities to support more housing types and affordable options for renters such as myself to stay in the neighborhood. We are confident that you will seize this opportunity to make Portland an equitable and inclusive place to live over the next 20 years and for the seventh generation. Thank you for your support and consideration.
Thank you. Nick, why don't you?
Got a different order. Thanks.
Okay.
Hi. My name is Carol Chan, and I'm a staff with Apano as a Chinese organizer associate. We oppose the downzoning of East Moreland neighborhood, which can be a part of a citywide solutions to end displacement. Specifically, we oppose amendments M74, M75, B88, which would down-designate the comp plan map for the East Moreland Plan District and other areas of that neighborhood. We agree with both Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff and with the Planning and Sustainability Commission that East Moreland should stay at the draft plan designation. Those who are opposed to down designation, please stand up.
Okay.
Already
standing behind you.
Thank you. Addressing displacement requires making equitable policies on both sides, allowing for access to high opportunity neighborhoods while investing in people in places like East Portland. It's also important to make a distinction about the downzoning of areas like Powellhurst, Gilbert, that bear the brunt of overcrowding schools that are also in great need of investment and infrastructure, transit service, and high-quality housing. East Moreland is a very different story. Into the next 20 years, we must ensure that families have better housing opportunities, also paying attention to neighborhoods like the one I work in. I've witnessed families at an apartment complex in East Portland struggle making ends meet to pay their monthly rent. Many tenants are afraid that they'll be forced to move. Moving is stressful and means that they're forced to leave their current support system, friends, other families, and services they're familiar with. Families are living with excessive mold. Floors crawl with cockroaches. The landlord does repairs to beautify the apartment complex until midnight and pays no attention to horrendous living conditions that families endure. Some families won't ask the landlord for repairs, afraid of retaliation and even eviction. I've already seen signs of this happening. The landlord gave residents a 24 hours notice to completely remove all items from all cabinets, drawers, and refrigerators so pest control could go in. If tenants didn't comply, tenants would incur a rescheduling fee. With non-negotiable terms like these, living conditions feel unfair and no end. Anti-displacement policies that you've adopted will absolutely help people. Thank you. Although these struggles cannot work alone, access to affordable options in places like Eastmoreland and Buckman must also be made available so that people have choices. If not, more barriers to fair housing that I've described will only increase. Do we want to see this kind of income and race segregation where families struggle for basic dignity? We welcome ways that all neighborhoods be an active part of the solution for affordability across Portland.
Thank you very much. You're next.
Good afternoon, Council President Fish and members of the Commission. My name is Mary Kyle McCurdy, Policy Director at 1000 Friends and a member of ADPDX. I also testify today as a resident of Eastmoreland in opposition to proposed Amendment 74, which would downzone Eastmoreland from R5 to R7. My husband and I purchased our first and only home in Eastmoreland in 1990. We chose it because it's a neighborhood of opportunity. It has a network of walking and biking, friendly sidewalks and streets for the children we plan to have, has good schools nearby, near to downtown, pretty good transit at the time, within walking, biking, and transit of two neighborhood centers, Westmoreland and Woodstock, close to Reed College, and it was relatively affordable back then. These are the same reasons many people want to live in Eastmoreland today, except two things have changed. It's become less and less affordable, and all of the active transportation options have improved. We have the Orange Line, the Springwater Corridor, the 20s bikeways, and more. Since then, we have raised two children who attended Dunaway, Selwood, and Cleveland Public Schools. We've been active in our community. Among other things, I've served as the president of the local school foundation for each of these schools, and my husband is a past president of the Neighborhood Association. He's already submitted testimony in opposition to this downzoning. The opportunities and amenities offered by neighborhoods like Eastmoreland should be broadly available to families and individuals of all incomes. With the current zoning of R5, that's already challenging, and I think you'll see ways to address this when you receive recommendations from your single-family infill committee. However, exacerbating this challenge by increasing lot sizes to 7,000 square feet is simply creating an economically exclusive gated community without the gate. Significant investments have been made in transit, bicycling, and pedestrian infrastructure, including the $1.2 billion Orange Line. That's a public investment that more families and individuals should have the opportunity to benefit from. As many Portlanders, including in my neighborhood, grow older, they should have the opportunity to age in their neighborhoods where they already have a network of friends, know the grocery clerk and the bank teller, et cetera. Changing the zoning to R7 is going in the opposite direction of meeting changing family needs.
I need to wrap up.
You'll hear the argument that going to R7 in my neighborhood is simply being consistent with the way the neighborhood is currently developed. I think that's both misleading and irrelevant. The existing lot sizes in Eastmoreland are a plurality of sizes, from under 4,000 to over 7,000 square feet. And zoning was never meant to be stagnant. It's meant to change and adapt as socioeconomic demographics change. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nick?
I'm Nick Sovey. I'm the director of Rose Community Development and the co-chair of the Eastmoreland Action Plan Housing Subcommittee. I hope that you'll support the anti-displacement PDX recommendations in the comp plan. I want to thank Council and the Planning and Sustainability Commission for working with us to fix our housing emergency. EPAP has spent the last 2 years working on involuntary displacement prevention recommendations, and we think the comp plan actions are consistent with those. East Portland is experiencing huge rent hikes, no-cause evictions, displacement of entire buildings. City Council needs to put on a full-court press to really address the displacement problem. That includes the things that are in the comp plan about planning and zoning. It includes fixing the design review process. Rose is doing a project in Lentz that just lost 4 units and had hundreds of thousands of dollars of additional costs put on by design review and other city requirements. We can look at building codes, taxes and fees, financing, value capture. I think these are all important. With the growth in Portland, we're looking at something like 100,000 new units, and we think that presents a tremendous opportunity to develop a workforce to build that housing through community benefits agreements that support workers and small businesses. So thanks for adopting the plan, and I hope you'll pay attention to the implementation as well. No new redlining and displacement. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Carla, next three.
Are 11, 12, and 13, Alan Dubbins, Virginia Burgess, and Bob Johnson. And they'll be followed by 14, 15, and 16, Al Garvey, Larry Margolin, and Deborah O'Neill.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, why don't you kick us off?
We're going to go the other way. Sorry.
I've been getting it wrong every time. Why should you be any different? Sir, why don't you kick us off?
Thanks, Commissioner. President of the Council and Commissioners, my name is Alan Dobbins, and I'm here to talk about the Comp Plan Amendment M60. We all live in Terwilliger Plaza and have the privilege of serving, and I have the privilege of serving on the Board of Directors as Vice President. We find ourselves with a kind of problematic planning situation. The plaza is located within four different planning zones. We would be well served were the plaza in just one zone, high-density multi-dwelling. As we look to the future, as we consider the silver tsunami, elderly white-haired folks reaching the age of retirement, living longer, facing more protracted periods of illness, while the plaza already provides excellent health care services, we believe we will need to offer additional services. I want to thank each of you because I think you've all spoken at Terwilliger Plaza, so you perhaps know about us, but I want to say a little bit more. We are a place where some 350 members have come to live out the last years of their lives. They are people who choose to live near Portland's rich cultural and political center and the university. They want to be involved in civic and educational activities. Our mission statement speaks to this point. Quote, the plaza is a nonprofit continuing care retirement center, empowering seniors to lead vital and engaged lives within the plaza and the larger community. It is also a place where over 200 employees work, and the plaza has been recognized several times as one of the most attractive places in which to work in Portland and indeed in Oregon. The plaza is a standalone facility, that is, it is not owned by a corporation. The board is fully responsible for its management and operations. The board consists of 9 members who live in the facility, plus 4 outside members with full voice and voting privilege who bring needed expertise to board decision makings. We have a foundation, one of whose purposes is to provide support for those who have exhausted their financial resources so that no one will ever be forced to leave the plaza for financial reasons. We are proud that the plaza offers a vibrant and stable place to live, and we expect to continue to do so for many years. I apologize for exceeding my time.
No, thank you very much. And let's take a moment and acknowledge that when Jack Oman got the Pulitzer Prize for editorial cartooning, one of the things that he put up was a video of his parents, a video tribute to his parents off of his cartoon art, and it begins with their home when they were at Terwilliger Plaza.
His father lived right over me.
I think it's safe to say, speaking for all my colleagues, that all of us probably do more preparation for that invitation. Because when you look at it and you see former Supreme Court justices and elected officials and journalists and people, it's one of the toughest audiences to go speak to, and it's an honor to be invited.
Sir, you're very kind, and I might say we also prepared for another tough audience.
Thank you for joining us. Ma'am, you're next.
Okay. My name is Virginia Burgess, and I'm a resident member of Terwilliger Plaza since 2014. I'm here today in support of the Amendment M60. My involvement with the plaza began in 1985 when my mother became a member, and she lived there till 2012. She died at 99. In 2000, I was recruited to serve on the Terwilliger Plaza Foundation Board, and upon completing 9 years on that board, I was then elected to serve on the governing board for an additional 7 years with duties as treasurer and 7 years on the finance committee as well. The plaza began with a 360-unit tower building in 1962 that restricted membership to ambulatory seniors only. No walkers or wheelchairs allowed. Times have changed. Since then, the plaza has evolved to include 247 independent living units of varying sizes, plus a 44 assisted living and 21 residential care units to accommodate most levels of required by members. In 1997, Terwilliger Plaza gained full international accredited status as a CCRC, continuing care retirement community. Although fewer than 10% of CCRCs are so accredited, the plaza has maintained this status continuously since 1997. During my association with the plaza, I have seen continued growth in facilities and services, including refurbishment of living units, addition of double glazing and central air conditioning to the tower, addition of assisted living buildings, addition of wellness center, workout and classrooms, swimming pool, expansion of the auditorium, library and dining room, and additions to the qualified staff to serve those areas. The plaza's financial position is strong with BBB credit rating, a $17 million annual budget, and a $24 million reserve fund, all of which will support further growth in facilities and services. Again, to enable this healthy growth, I am in support of Amendment M60. If I have 10 more seconds, I will add, one of the things we are proud of is that we don't have just large, expensive units. We still retain small one-bedroom and studio units, so we have a broad section of people. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll just also note that the Bureau has recommended support for M60, so thank you for coming out and testifying on that.
Thank you.
Sir, you're up.
My name is Bob Johnson, and I am the interim president and CEO of Terwilliger Plaza, along with Jenny and Alan. Thank you very much for your time and the opportunity to speak in support of Amendment M60. Terwilliger Plaza is fortunate to have an engaged and visionary board of directors, the majority of whom are residents of Terwilliger Plaza. As they have looked to the future, they see as essential the need to add services and to grow. Additional services and growth are needed to answer the challenge of the baby boomers, who, like me, are starting to move into communities such as Terwilliger Plaza. In the near future, we will see a record demand for housing in communities like Terwilliger. The plaza sees the specific need for adding memory care services beyond what we offer now, and the need for additional independent apartments because of this silver tsunami, as the boomers have been dubbed. There will be increasing need for housing of all types for persons 65 years and over. The plaza also wishes to continue as an independent nonprofit organization. Economies of scale demand growth to achieve that goal of continued independence. Adoption of the comprehensive plan and this amendment will allow for a less confusing and less costly expansion process for Terwilliger Plaza if the plaza chooses to expand at some point in the future. Working with four zones that currently intersect the property is confusing and may ultimately make any future building impractical, which will seriously hinder the services that the plaza can offer to the aging population. Thank you very much for this time. I encourage you to vote for Amendment M60. Thank you for your support.
Thank you, all three.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Carla, next three, please.
Are Al Garvey, Larry Margolin, and Deborah O'Neill, 14, 15, and 16, and they'll be followed by Josh Easton, Renee Corbett, and Gabriel Triplett, 17, 18, and 19.
Okay. Welcome. Sir, you're first. Why don't you lead us off?
Great. My name is Larry Margolin, and I'm here to talk about Amendment M20.
You could just move the mic a little closer. Sure. And that whole thing moves if necessary.
I'll just move myself. My name is Larry Margolin. I'm here to speak on Amendment M20. And firstly, thank you for considering Amendment M20. My neighbors and I support the CM zoning on Markham Hill and the proposed extension of this zoning designation one block west up Markham Hill to Southwest 12th. This area up by OHSU is in significant need of quality housing and services within walking distance to OHSU. There are upwards of 3,000 new students that arrive each summer and struggle to find quality housing options on the hill. Many of the 1930s single-family homes have been converted to multiple units or bedroom rentals. The neighborhood continues to be concerned about, or the neighborhood association continues to be concerned about the vehicle traffic and parking issues on the hill. But I think that the city planners are correct that the hill needs improved amenities, sidewalks, transit, commercial services, and housing to reduce the vehicle trips up and down the hill. For my property, I'm currently undergoing a design and feasibility study to determine the best use that fits the neighborhood and provides needed housing and makes economic sense. We're looking at a small apartment building designated to serve the OHSU community with new sidewalks, stormwater mitigation, and modern housing options. This will be a pedestrian and bicycle-oriented development sitting just half a block from the number 8 frequent service bus and 4 blocks from the tram. So I thank you for submitting Amendment M20, and I appreciate your support.
Does the Neighborhood Association support it, do you know?
I went to the Neighborhood Association meeting, and it was voted 4-6 with only 12 people there and only 6 voters. But they didn't, no. So 4-6 was the thing.
I appreciate the numbers. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I am Albert Gary. My last name is spelled G-A-R-R-E. I am here to speak in favor of Amendment F-72. My wife and I have lived in the Argate Terrace neighborhood for 32 years. I am here to speak about the zoning designation for property in the Argate neighborhood, which is immediately west of 122nd Avenue and south of Northeast Shaver Street, that is currently open land and is being farmed by its respective landowners. For full disclosure, my wife and I are one of those landowners, and our 10-acre portion of this land is currently zoned residential R3. It was about 31 years ago during annexation of this land when the city went through almost an identical zoning process for this property. The result of that process was a decision to designate most of the open farmland as an R3 medium density residential zone and some of it abutting 122nd as commercial zone. Amendment F-72 continues the philosophy of that original zoning decision. It was correct 31 years ago, and it is even more correct today. Regarding the residential zoning of this land, the R3 designation for this property makes especially good sense because of its proximity to the soon-to-be-opened Lewitt View Park. Those who choose to live in a medium-density housing arrangement are more likely to need and use a park. Having an active park is vital to keeping it safe, a neighborhood-friendly area, which makes the entire neighborhood a better place to live. So, a future residential R3 development on this property, which is located near a city park, a collector street, an arterial street, and a commercially zoned area, makes good planning sense. It will contribute to a more complete community, and it will make the Argate neighborhood a more desirable and livable area. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Deborah O'Neill, and I'm a resident of Portland, and I'm here to testify on behalf of the Bosco Milligan Foundation Architectural Heritage Center. The Bosco Milligan Foundation, BMF, thanks individual council members for advancing amendments to the comprehensive plan that increased the protection of historic buildings and neighborhoods. We urge the council as a whole to include these amendments, Chapter 3 and 4 of the final adopted version of the plan. Attached to our testimony is a list of the amendments to the comprehensive plan goals and policies that the BMF supports. These amendments, if adopted, will give historic resources a more important place in the comprehensive plan and thus offers the possibility of creating centers and neighborhoods that maintain and increase Portland's desirable character. We recognize that the policies set the right direction and that programs by governments, nonprofit organizations like ours, and private investors and individuals will be necessary to actually implement these goals and policies. We look forward to working with the city on implementation. I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Carla, next street, please.
We're going to go with 17, 21, and 22. 17 is Joe Easton, Josh Easton, Joe Angel, and Eric Hovey are next, and they'll be followed by Renee Corbett, Gabriel Triplett, and Cameron Harrington.
Gentlemen, hello. Mr. Angel, you want to kick us off?
I will. Thank you. My name is Joe Angel. I started in the restaurant business in 1967. At that time, Burger King had no drive-thrus. In 1975, I had moved to Portland and started a series of buildings. And on the third building at Lloyd Center, we opened the first drive-thru in the country for Burger King. The customer demand was such that they asked us to do that because of so many people having an experience with In-N-Out. The result was a big success. It allowed us to reduce the parking lots that we had been required to have in the past, and we needed to be in areas where there were pass-by trips, areas like where there's a Fred Meyer's or a Safeway or a pharmacy. We don't rely on trips that come directly to us. We rely on trips that are out there doing other things. The issue of safety has come up. In 40 years of operation, there has not been one accident between a drive-thru lane and a pedestrian. Not one. In the 1990s, I was on the Planning Commission, and the governor asked me to get on a task force for ODOT. The task force was charged with trying to reduce vehicle miles traveled, and we came up with various methods to do that, trying to get people out of their cars and into other forms of transportation. We had a very successful group, and we came up with various ways to do that. We also worked on the problems in the restaurant industry, which, because of our society, the peak periods come three times a day, whether you like it or not. So you have to have parking for those three peak periods, or they end up going out into the neighborhood. We have relied upon commercial zoning since the time commercial zoning started, because we make 30 and 40-year commitments. When we buy into a C2 zone, we expect that we can sign leases with people for 30 or 40 years.
Joe, could you just help me understand that a little better, the interplay between a long-term lease and the potential trigger of a conditional use permit and how that works?
Yes. Our big fear is that we have bought property that is C2 property, and the city suddenly changes the zone on us. We have a drive-through lane. That then becomes a non-conforming use. My tenants, I'm now out of the restaurant business, but I'm a landlord. My tenants are required to remodel every 10 years to stay current with the brand's image. And so when they go in to get a permit, they're a non-conforming use, and they get into a whole series of requirements that the only thing that changed was the city changed my zone that I have maybe bought 20 years ago. So
is there a way to resolve that issue without having to change the drive-through component?
Yes. Let me get to what I'm asking for.
Okay.
I'll quit telling you my story. Here's what we would like. Allow drive-through lanes in all commercial zones except the obvious places, downtown, 39th and Hawthorne, 23rd, 21st, Multnomah Village, districts like that are obviously pedestrian-oriented districts. Allow drive-throughs that are permitted before the date of this new zoning to be conforming uses under the code. If you decide, Joe, we don't care, we want to change the zone there, and I have a drive-through there, please, please don't make it non-conforming. Write into the code that it is a conforming use if it's before a certain date.
And is this proposal reflected in a current amendment, or is this a tweak to an existing amendment?
This is a no amendment. I will have to give you a letter with my testimony.
Could you do that before Friday?
I will. I had to try to come up with solutions for you today. So
no, we appreciate it. That's why we're giving you a little extra time. So just wrap up, if you would.
Okay. Change the proposed language says prohibit. Right now in the code, it says not allowed. When it's not allowed, you're able to go in and try to convince the staff that you need a drive-through. And so it should be outright in areas where there's now C2 zoning. But if you put it in areas where you don't want it, say not allowed, not prohibited.
So I'm going to have to ask you to wind up there. I would appreciate seeing a proposal in writing before Friday. The mayor's already made clear he feels very strongly about this issue. We do have an amendment that's in the packet that kind of addresses it. And what you're suggesting is a kind of a maybe a third way. I don't know, Joe, whether it has support on the council or not, but I'd like to see what it looks like, and I'd like to get staff feedback on it.
Thank you.
And I have a question. Do you have any properties in the downtown area that have drive-thrus?
Not anymore, Commissioner. I used to have one in Burnside and Broadway. It's now
I threw a brick through the window of that Burger King.
It
was wonderful. Okay. Yes, it was one of the best experiences of my first term. But that's how I digress.
But in the central city, I have several buildings.
Right? It was part of the demolition, oh, okay. Yes. I had permission to throw the brick through the window. So I believe that the mayor's amendment was simply to prohibit in the downtown area. You're pointing out the ones in the Lloyd District or Central City, and those would
right.
That's
and,
your concern.
And over by the Multnomah County Courthouse.
Yes, so it may be a refinement of what the mayor was intending, because I think he was talking about not allowed in other areas. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification. And I what I also think I hear you saying is there might be some opportunity for grandfathering just so the rules don't change radically. But anyway, this is a complicated issue. The more you can put in writing for us to chew over, the better.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome.
Greetings. Hi, my name is Joshua Easton. I'm a resident of Collinsview neighborhood. I live on Maple Crest Drive. I'm a homeowner there. And I am testifying today to protest last-minute changes, specifically Amendment S-16, or last-minute changes by Lewis and Clark in an attempt to incorporate properties located at the intersection of Southwest Terwilliger and Southwest Lower Boones Ferry Road. Into Lewis and Clark's campus institutional zone. These properties are not located within Lewis and Clark's master plan and as such should not be included within the boundaries of the campus institutional zone. As was mentioned earlier today, the college was denied a request to include these properties in a land use case in 2009, and Lewis and Clark did not raise this request during work on the comp plan or upon review by the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and doing so now indicates a clear desire to circumvent the public process for land use decisions. The primary problems from this rezoning, which were referenced in the 2009 case, arise from the serious transportation and environmental impact that development of this property would have on the Collinsview neighborhood. For these reasons, the Collinsview Neighborhood Association unanimously opposes this amendment. The primary reason is that with the use of Southwest Terwilliger and especially Lower Boones Ferry Road as primary arterial thoroughfares from residents of Lake Oswego to I-5, there's too much traffic. There's too much traffic on this two-lane neighborhood street that makes it untenable for residents like myself who live on Maple Crest Drive, which sits adjacent to this to these properties, to enter and exit our neighborhood in a safe manner. Every morning, traffic regularly backs up from I-5 to my street, which is a distance of over a mile, and allowing Lewis and Clark the opportunity to develop this property, which it has indicated a strong desire to do in previous attempts to rezone this property, would only exacerbate that problem. And I hope the council will seek to not incorporate this amendment into the comp plan update. Thank you.
May I just be clear about something, because we've been getting a lot of testimony about the apparent procedural concerns about this. I assume that even if we had more time and this was fully vetted with the neighborhood, you've set forth substantive reasons why you would oppose this.
Correct.
Aside from whether it has
that's correct. Until any infrastructural changes are made to that intersection, there are very clear reasons why we should oppose development.
Thank you.
Eric Hovey, consultant to the Retail Task Force. Last Thursday, I spoke to the importance of P44 to assure a full spectrum of grocery stores, and P60 as pivotal to provide for retail development with the diversity of goods and services, especially in underserved areas. Today, I'm here to expand my remarks in support of P51, a new policy that calls for considering short-term market conditions and how development patterns will transition over time. how they'll transition over time when creating new development regulations. Planning that fosters less auto dependence but without shortchanging resident needs and business vitality, especially again in underserved areas of the city as in East Portland. Metro household surveys and retail data that we have compiled convey three messages. First, while transit, walking, and biking are on the rise, auto use still accounts for more than 80% of trips outside the central city. So retail, it's very important to continue to accommodate that auto use, as Joe Angel has mentioned. Second, outside the central city, Portland is under-retailed, especially in East Portland, where grocery choices remain scarce and expensive for